in this 14th chapter that we are studying in this ongoing weekly study of Bhagavad Gita, we saw the nature of bondage and thus how one can become free from it. When we understand how we are bound, then it becomes easier for us to untie the knot and get established in the freedom. So, therefore, this chapter is very important psychologically to see what creates the bondage around us. If we are free, then whether the bondage from, why is it there? And this chapter explains that this bondage is because of what is called three ropes or three strands of a rope that tie us together. The ignorance that hides our true infinite nature. This ignorance has three expressions. One is like the pleasure sensation and knowledge sensation, and that is accompanied with serenity and so forth, some blessed qualities. Then the other is the desire to act to fulfill desires. The desires arise and they propel us into action. That is called rajas. The first one that I told you is called sattva, and the rope of sattva, which is a pleasant rope, a nice looking rope that does not bind us painfully. But therefore, to break it is not easy emotionally. We get quickly attached to it. Oh, it looks so nice and so forth. The other that I was telling you about, the desires spring up. They propel us into various activities. We run after those. Thus the life becomes full of activity. And these activities, they go on multiplying. The nature of these activities is such that it is never finished. You think that after this and I am all done. But then before you even finish that, many more these desires and the desire-related activities, they spring up. And one doesn't know how to control and stop it. We see the examples of it in our life all the time, that we think that, okay, now after this I will be free from activity. I had the desire to do this and I have done that, and after this is finished I am going to withdraw myself. It doesn't come that easily, because the nature of activity is such that it generates a big momentum and it keeps on propelling again on the fuel of desires. So it goes on and on. There is in physics, there is a concept of perpetual motion that gets never achieved. There is no perpetual motion that you can actually generate because of the resistance. But an example of perpetual motion is this our activity. The desires, they keep on self-propelling it. You do not really require other propellant for it. You keep on doing actions. You set in motion and then it generates its own fuel, it generates its own motion, and so you keep on working and working and working and working till you die, as Swami Vivekananda describes. And then you die fighting and fighting and fighting, and you never know that whether you won or lost or how much fight you have to go on doing. Again you are born and keep on doing the same thing. The next life also gets propelled by that. So this is something that is the very painful. So the result of this rajas is the sufferings. And the third is the indolence, laziness, the depression, irritation, all that comes to us. That is a complete covering. That is called tamas. So that is also a bondage. All these three come to our life as three different strands of this big rope. And the bondage is very strong, very intricate to untie. This knot becomes so involved that it just you cannot untie it at all. So therefore it is good to study that how these different three ropes function and how we can free ourselves from that. So last time we were seeing very important aspect, that how do we know before these gunas, they actually attack us. If we can know that they are going to attack now through certain signs, then it will be better for us. We get a forewarning, and thus we will be able to prepare ourselves to tackle them. It is therefore we are told by this master psychologist Lord Krishna that how these different strands of bondage start coming. And just as you know the weather forecast, and then although it may not be always accurate, and yet we base our actions on that and we prepare ourselves for that. It was last year that Irene was coming, that storm Irene, and so since there was the warning that that hurricane is approaching, the contractor who was that construction was going on at that time, and to protect the walls and all, he boarded the whole place, spending lot of money on that, because otherwise if there was chance that if the hurricane really comes very heavily, then whatever work he has done will suffer a big damage. So therefore, since there was warning, he could do that. If there had been no warning and suddenly it had just lashed, then nothing could have been done. So can we get warnings of these gunas coming in our life to bind us? Yes, the symptoms are there. When you see those symptoms, act immediately, and thus you will be able to counter those. It has been described how the signs of sattva come in our life, that the sensory organs, they get a sparkle in them, that sparkle of knowledge coming and happiness coming. Now you see that when you feel that desire to know and the knowledge is coming, those LEDs in the sense organs, they start sparkling, they start shining, glowing, and then you see that, that it is functioning. I gave the example like I see this microphone is functioning and there is an LED there that glows. So in our sensory organs, we can all feel that they lit up. The faces lit up. When, for example, I gave this example that last time, that it is, I can see which of the listeners, which of the people present here are actually listening. It is, and who are not, by their faces, because they, when you receive, the eyes light up, the faces, they also, they, you see a glow in them, a light in them. It is quite clear, one can observe it, and more than other person observing, oneself can feel it too. So there is this pleasure sense that lights up, the knowledge which that also lights up, all the sensory organs, they are kind of ready to receive, they open up and the knowledge starts coming. Now it is good bondage, it is a better bondage, good to get knowledge. Good to get knowledge, but bad to get bound by it. Bound by it, then we have no control over the use of it. So, good to have knowledge, but very bad to get bound by it. So, therefore, when such things come, only tell yourself. It is the sattva that is shining forth. I am not that. I am beyond that. Don't get bound by it. It is just observe the knowledge coming and the happiness coming. Be aloof. Watch it. It is something that one can do through practice. That knowledge is coming to me. Just look at it. This is a figurative way of saying look at it. Think that I am not that. It is just like a good weather coming. So I am not good weather or bad weather, but when it is a nice sunny moderate temperature and that kind of weather, you feel good. So nice weather today, so you get a good feeling about it. So just watch it and don't let yourself be identified with it. It is a mental exercise that if we do it, we will, that sattva guna, it will come, but it will then not bind us. This is, it being a pleasant bondage, there will be a tendency to catch it, tendency to hold on to it. That is how they say that a bee gets caught. There are nice verses in Sanskrit literature, one very famous by Kalidasa, that how a bee got caught in a lotus, a beautiful lotus was there in some small marshy place, and the bee got caught in it, started sipping the honey. It didn't feel it as that it is getting caught, it was enjoying, and so didn't realize the bondage of that. Then, as the evening approached the sunset, that lotus petals closed. Till morning it was not going to open. Now the bee actually has power, sufficient power to pierce it. It has that kind of tusk, that it could drill through those petals and it could have gotten out. But it thought, so to say, it is an imagery of how we think, that, oh, what is there, you know, let me enjoy this more. I don't need to go out so quickly. After all, there will be again morning. The night will pass, there will be morning, and then the petals of lotus will open again, and then I will fly out. I don't have to really cut this petals of lotus. But then during the night an elephant came and just trampled over it, killing the bee. So that story, that it when there is a chance to escape, if you don't escape, then there may not come another chance. So take your chance there. So the pleasure sensation makes us bound there, the knowledge sensation binds us to, and before we know, it gives rise to the activities propelled by desires. If I just have knowledge, I feel happy. That doesn't stop there. Had it stopped, it would have been great. But no, I want to show off my knowledge. I want to tell people how learned I am. I need to give, you know, lectures and so forth to show that how learned I am and how ignorant you folks are. So I start activity that propels further desires, that I should get name, fame, money, to enjoy. Then that creates jealousy, hatred and so forth. That other lecturer, he is not as good as I am, but you see, somehow by hook and crook manages to get more invitations and more money and more those things. It is the hatred and jealousy and all those things, they follow without one's even noticing those. So sattva doesn't remain as sattva, it changes into the rajas and then into tamas. So therefore these come and go, and none of these things change into one another. Sometimes in life the sattva is predominant, then it gets overtaken by the rajas, and that both get overtaken by tamas, and again the tamas also gets overtaken by sattva and rajas and so forth. So therefore it is important that we know how they rise. So we saw how the sattva rises. We also had seen last time how the rajas rises and the desires, they start springing. That lobha pravritti arambha, the words used by Lord are great, that the greed, activity, undertaking of work, restlessness, desire, these prevail. The greed, oh yes, I should have this and this and this. It is not that I am really dying without it. Not that I don't have to do all these things, but the desire springs up. I want to have this. And then, and it cannot be suppressed. It propels the activity. That activity then also cannot be suppressed. The force is so strong, you cannot stop it. So he says, karmanam ashamas pruha, that it is actually in translation this doesn't come, that karmanam ashamas pruha, that this translation doesn't give that connotation, that unsuppressible that activity comes up. When it is already now arisen, it is not possible to put it down. you have to wait till it finishes its cycle and then know, as soon as the desires start arising, think, do you want this? And with at this cost, why do you need this? Don't get into these desires, and then the desire related unsuppressible tremendous activity. Then you get attached to it, you think that it is your creation, so you want to take care of it, and so the activity goes on increasing. And the desire to have to be with other person, you get you join together as a couple, then you get that children come up, then you think that is your now job to take care of them, and then the unending process goes on. And then not only your kids, I have to take care of my grandkids and so forth, and a good label is put onto that. It is bondage, but since we don't want to get rid of this bondage, instead of calling it as bondage, we call it love, and we call it caring for the family. When one gives nice names to it, then you don't want to get rid of them, then you can justify that. Even if you, whether you justify or you don't justify, it doesn't change this situation that you are terribly bound and getting into more and more of that bondage. This situation just cannot be changed by changing the labels. This is a very important thing, friends, that needs to be seen here. Lord is trying to tell how this rajas comes in. The most important aspect of this bondage is this rajas, the activity. One becomes that stirring for the activity just comes up. I must do it. It is, and then one starts working. Working, working, working. It is not easy just to sit still. It is, sometimes we have guided meditation sessions, and after a few minutes, one starts hearing. Now there is really not, that cough and all is not there, but the personality doesn't want to sit quiet and calm. Something needs to be done, and so some such total noise is produced as if there is some irritation in the throat. There is no irritation in the throat, but there is irritation in the mind, so that comes out as the irritation in the throat. I have noticed it many times that during this meditation, because that total calmness, sitting still, starts becoming oppressive to the mind, which is so prone to restlessness and activity. So here it is also said, restlessness, just continuously it is restless. So that is the nature of the mind. So it is many times compared in our literature to a monkey. Not just ordinary monkey. Monkey by very nature is restless. But imagine that monkey who is being, you know, just filled with vodka to its neck. Or that wine is poured into this monkey. Now how more restless that fellow will become. Then in addition to that, it gets possessed by a terrible ghost. Now can you imagine that kind of monkey? Our minds are like that, always restless. So therefore when there is an attempt to bring some kind of a stillness and restfulness to it, it for a couple of seconds it feels okay, and then some desire comes for activity. Many times we see that people just start moving their legs, sitting quiet, you know, but no need to move their legs, but you start moving them. Why so? Because that quietness, that stillness is not acceptable to our mental condition. So one makes movement of the legs, or there is no need, but one starts rubbing the face. It is these things go on because of the inherent restlessness. And then the third thing, the tamoguna, the tamas, that you don't want to do anything, you want to just go into sleep, you want to be just left alone, not because you are so serene and feel no need of company, but because of that irritation, you don't want to talk to anybody. That grumpiness comes to mind. You say something then that you shouldn't have said. The whole life is then, you know, at that time, you do exactly those things which are inappropriate, not right, and because of this ignorance, the covering becomes very thick. All sense of what is appropriate gets lost, and quarrelsome nature comes up. Don't want to do anything, although you need to do, that laziness comes up. The person becomes tremendously disorganized in life. Things go on getting procrastinated. I'm giving a bit of my description, you see. It is, things keep on getting procrastinated, tomorrow, maybe next month, and Shankaracharya describes it like that. That this fellow, what is to be done today or tomorrow, even after a month it remains undone. So that is the nature of this tamas. Then you start blaming others, or that happens automatically, that it is you have to defend yourself. So we all use that Fifth Amendment for that, you know, that it is we go to defend ourselves, that we don't say anything that incriminates us. So we say that no, I needed lot of rest. You see that I was working so hard, so I need lot of rest. And then that person came and spoiled all my day, and we are good to at blaming others. That comes in that. In the tamoguna phase, that tamas phase, therefore, all these things come. Swami Vivekananda says that, well, we Indians are very much overcome by this tamas and want to pass it for the sattva. That you are calm and therefore you are not doing any activity. Fellow, you are so disorganized that the activity is not possible for you. And that there is no knowledge at all. The ignorance is all condensed. And therefore, although the desires come up, you don't have the means to satisfy those desires. And so, you take the garb of renunciation. And that is all tamoguna. It is... one gentleman who used to come almost say thrice a week, and used to do, whenever he would come here, ask, well, what work needs to be done, tell me, this work, and he made this comment, I still remember, that for you Indians, it is difficult to do work. For we Americans, it is difficult to be without work. Always we need to do something. If you tell me, what is there, just sit quiet. This is to be done, that is to be done. I have to find out some work. Otherwise, I will drill a hole and put a screw in the wall and then take it out so that some activity happens. No, that it is drill a hole in the wall. Why? Because there is nothing to do. So I think that let me drill a hole in the wall. And then, because he is kind of carpenter, so do something. And then, since that is not necessary, so he got two work, you know. One to drill the hole, put the screw in, then take the screw out, fill in the hole, and all that. So his day is made. So it is that is called tamoguna. That is called rajoguna. Keep on active, doing something all the time, and then this tamas, not doing anything. It is, there are desires, but then I want to see that movie, but who will get out of the bed and then go and drive and pay and well, it is so difficult to make this fellow active. It is always lies to, and then I philosophize after that. After all, what is there in the movie? Nothing, you know. So let it. It is good that I don't see it. Not that there was no desire, but that is the case. You know that the grapes are sour. That story, you know. That fox tried to grab those first. But then when could not, then philosophized it. After all, those grapes are sour. So that is the tamas. So they come in life. Now, Lord is going to tell what happens in our life. The results are there. So how do you get these results? It is very pointedly described here that the 14th verse, yada sattve pravriddhe tu pralayam yati dehabhrit tadottam vidam lokan amalan pratipadyate. If the embodied self meets with death when sattva is predominant, then it attains the pure spheres of the worshippers of the highest deities. So that is the result when since one is not free from gunas, you will have to take rebirth. But how your rebirth happens? If one has the knowledge, I am free from all gunas, I am the infinite, I am the divine, I am perfection itself, then no rebirth. But otherwise one gets rebirth. And how one gets rebirth depends on the state of the mind, the desires rising at that time of the death. So when one is about to give up this body and the mind is in the state of sattva, now it is at this point, now the choice is going to be made. And what is predominant at that time of death, now you make the choice. Like when you go to a mall, many things are available, but and you have many desires. But when you are at the mall, whatever desire is prominent at that moment, you end up buying that. So, when the sattva is predominant, you buy a body. It is buying actually. You buy a body, and that is suitable for the expression of sattva. So you are born with very good tendencies. you become the worshipper of the highest and pure deities and so forth. The idea is that you have your birth where there is more scope for enlightenment, more scope for knowledge and peace and serenity. You are born in that surroundings. So it is just convenience that is given to you by the surroundings to express more sattva. You go, suppose, in the mall, and then at that time you had the desire to play guitar, and then you see that there is a music store there, and so the desire to play guitar is very strong at that time, so you go and buy a guitar at that time. Suppose you are at that time thinking of having nice pair of shoes, then there may be the desire to buy guitar at some layer, some lower layers, that desire might be there. But what do you then think of more is, let me buy a good pair of shoes. So you end up buying a pair of shoes. So it is exactly like that, that if you die, that moment of death is, and now you are in a mall, and you are getting a new body now. You have, there is the time to choose which one you want to take. And then whatever tendencies are predominant at that time, accordingly a body will get chosen. So when sattva is predominant, a body that is suitable for the expression of this sattva nature, that comes out. Then accordingly you get that surroundings, that situation, that is called loka here. Rajasik pralayam gatva karma sangishu jayate tatha pralina stamasi mudhayo nishu jayate. If it meets with death when rajas is predominant, then it is born amongst those who are attached to work. Likewise, if it meets with death when tamas is predominant, then it is born in the wombs of irrational species. It is quite obvious, you know, this idea we had discussed in the 8th chapter, and we will get occasion to discuss more in 15th chapter as well, that day one chooses the bodies, one gets the bodies according to the that thought or the emotions predominant at the time of death. Lord says in the 8th chapter that whatever thing you are, you know, thinking about at the time of death, then you will, that itself will grossify into your next body. You will get birth according to that. And so he says, at the time of death, make sure that you are reciting the name of God. Fill yourself with the name of God. Think about God. So what will happen then? You will get God at the time of death. Same rule becomes applicable there as well, that if you are thinking about God at the time of death, then you get to Godhood after giving up this body. So this is told that how that one gets the birth according to the predominance of the gunas. The next verses tell that how their results are. We have seen those things, but it is emphasized in a somewhat succinct and concise way here in the 16th verse, that all these three, the actions also, therefore become sattvika, rajasika or tamasika, depending on what is propelling those what is more functional there. So 16th verse says, karmanah sukritasya ho sattvikam nirmalam phalam rajasastu phalam dukkham ajnanam tamasah phalam. The result of virtuous action is said to be sattvika and pure. The result of rajas is pain, while ignorance is the result of tamas. That is how the different things bring us different results. If there is sattva, then we will get the result of sattva. And what is that? That nirmalam phalam, the tranquility. The result will be a sense of tranquility in our minds. The minds will become peaceful and tranquil. And we see that if our action is propelled by sattva, if the sattva has produced that action, then it produces tranquility in return. If you, for example, have a feeling of benevolence, oh, let me do something good, and through that you do something, and thus the mind becomes peaceful, calm, full of serene thoughts. So that is the result of sattva. Rajas, that you get, oh, I must get this, I must do this, I must become President of United States and all that, and then that you get that result accordingly, which is painful, which is this result of rajas. The activity is produced by the sensual desires. The result of that is pain. So, and then when there is tamas, ajnana, the ignorance becomes more glossified, that is the result of these actions of tamas. So, that is the idea of just spending time lazily or going and quarreling with somebody, such things, they intensify that. It is more or less like what you sow, so you reap. Whatever is the seeds that are put in, accordingly you will reap the crop. So, if you are sowing sattva, the fruits also will be sattva, sattvika. If it is the activity is being sown rajas, then the result will be rajas and so forth. So, further description comes in the 17th verse. Sattvat sanjayate jnanam rajaso lobha evacha pramada moha utamaso bhavato jnanam evacha. From sattva results knowledge. From rajas, only greed, and from tamas, nothing but inadvertence, diligence and ignorance. So, the idea is that as a spiritual aspirant, and we should therefore try to do the activities which are sattvic, to keep ourselves in more and more sattva. All three are bondages. It is to be remembered that all three are bondages, but sattva helps us to cut asunder the other bondages. And like the story that we saw, that it's a very illustrative story, that those three thieves, the sattva is also a thief, but it released the person who was bound by the other two bandits. One of them was in fact going to kill that traveler. So, but the sattva freed that fellow and then showed him the way to go to his place, but did not accompany him to the village, because it is a thief, it cannot go into the village. So, therefore, this sattva guna also can come only up to that, but it is important to take help of it. Many times this question gets asked, all three are bondages anyway, so why should I cultivate sattva? All three are bondages, let me not cultivate anything. And so I will be free. Sometimes I used to say to my friends that, you know, we have to realize the truth, we have to go beyond virtues and vices, both virtues and vices. My job is reduced to half. You guys have to go beyond virtues and vices. Since I don't have virtues, I have to go only beyond vices. So my job is reduced to half, is it not? That is not the case. You take the help of the virtues to overcome the vices. So increasing the sattva, in being more and more established in sattva, makes us gradually feel the sense of inner self and get slowly established in it. And this is a process. I know our George doesn't like these discussions. George says, hey, we are already free, what is the need of all this? It is we are that, I am that. So no need to all this stuff. I know it all, that is, whether I realize it or not, who cares? After all, I am the self. But the bondage and freedom is all both in ignorance. Truly there is no bondage. And so our efforts, no efforts are required, that is true. And no efforts really lead to freedom either. But it is all relatively true that if you feel bondage, then you have to work to get liberated as well. One nice story that I had told before also, but good to remember, that one king, he had a little son about 12, 13 years old and so forth. So he got an idea somehow, that that idea captured him, that he has swallowed a snake while eating his food, and there was something long, it was a snake and he swallowed it. There wasn't any snake swallowed, but he started then having lot of stomach pain, just because of the thought that I have swallowed a snake. And then so many doctors were called, and the doctors, they examined and said, no, there is nothing like that, it is normal, nothing, no snake has been swallowed. But this fellow wouldn't be satisfied, that no, what do you mean, I actually saw that the snake getting into my stomach, why do you say that it is not there, and you see I am suffering so much. Then one physician, he said, okay, I will treat, let me examine. And then he started examining the stomach, moving hands over the abdomen, you see here, it gives more pain here, is it not? There is the head of the snake here, can you feel? Press it here, that is the head of the snake. Now there is no snake, so where go from the head of the snake? But he showed, look, if you press, there is the, and certainly you are getting more pain there, is it not? Yes, you are right, I feel more pain there, that is the head of the snake. And you see, the poison is oozing out from there, little by little. Good that you saw it, no problem, you know, we will get rid of it. Now I know where the snake is. And then he gave lot of purgatives to this this prince, and then told a servant to put a dead snake, a small dead snake, into the latrine. So and then I showed, oh, okay, so came out, you see, and the snake came out. Now you will feel all relief. See the snake coming out, did you see that it fell from your efficient, the snake came out. That's right. So that is why I was feeling. Now I feel such relief. So that is how the ignorance is. We are never bound, but feel ignorance. And therefore feel bondage. We are ignorant. I am just so and so. That is the feeling. And I am bound here in the world. I have desires which never get fulfilled. I have the friends and the foes and all that. The bondage is felt. Bondage is experienced. And while experiencing the bondage, there is no point in fooling ourselves saying that, oh, I am free. It is. Sri Ramakrishna used to say, yes, you can say that there is no thorn and so there is no prick, but then if you put finger on it, you feel the pain. So, therefore, when you have the feeling of bondage, then you have to work your way out also, imagining spiritual practices. That is the way. It is important that we play the whole game. If you don't get into the game, fine. But if you have gotten into the game, now play it faithfully. Play the rules of the game and then come out. Game is done. That's Vivekananda's poem, my play is done. So we will come out and say, hey, my play is done in the body. You know, I got into this human body. Funny thing. I am all pervading, but somehow thought that this is my body. I was acting and I performed all the roles there. I got kicked around, sometimes I was kicking around and all that. So, fun! I came out now. My play is done. I am free. I was ever free. But for that one has to transcend these three gunas, that from sattva results knowledge, from rajas only greed. So that is to be suppressed by increasing the sattva, and from tamas nothing but inadvertence and delusion and all that. So therefore one has to suppress the tamas by rajas and rajas by sattva. And by the help of sattva, ultimately you can get rid of all the three and become free. So we shall continue this study next Friday. Any questions? So, since there are no questions, we will conclude with the closing prayers.
गीता कर्तव्या किमन्यत् शास्त्र विस्तरैः या स्वयं पद्मनाभस्य मुखपद्माद्विनिश्रिता एकं शास्त्रं देवकी पुत्रगीतम् एको देवो देवकी पुत्र एव एको मन्त्रः तस्य नामानि यानि कर्माप्येकं तस्य देवस्य सेवा श्रीकृष्णार्पणमस्तु।